Hello and welcome to Talking Europe. I'm Armand Georgian in Paris. Now, my guest today is the longest serving Prime Minister of Croatia since the country emerged from the ruins of the former Yugoslavia in the early 1990s. Andrej Plenković is now on his third term, and during his 8 years in office, Croatia joined the Eurozone and the Schengen free travel area, and it's also had to deal with the fallout of the war in Ukraine and the energy crisis. Andrej Plenković is a seasoned player at EU summits and a prominent figure within the centre-right European People's Party. In Croatia, he leads a coalition that includes his own conservative HDZ party and the ultra-conservative Homeland Movement, and he joins me from Zagreb today. Prime Minister, welcome to the programme. Let's start with the question of migration, which seems to increasingly dominate the European agenda. And of course, at the last EU Council in Brussels, there was talk about front-loading the EU Asylum and Migration Pact. Do you think that pact needs to be updated?
We had indeed a very serious debate, predominantly based on the letter that President von der Leyen sent to all the leaders at the eve of the European Council. But then, moreover, we touched two specific items. One was the so-called weaponization of the illegal migrants, which was mentioned by our Polish colleague, Prime Minister Tusk, and the issues that he's facing at his eastern borders. And then also we heard an example from the Italian Prime Minister Meloni, who made a special arrangement with Albanian Prime Minister Rama about a center that would be ex-territorial, but physically in Albania, but managed by the Italian authorities in order to alleviate the tension and the pressure that we had. I think that the general atmosphere is that the position of the most of the countries is to stop illegal migration, to try to stop it at the external borders of the European Union or the Schengen borders, not to allow the new flow of migrants based on the very negative examples with dire consequences for the European political spectra that happened in 2015 and 16, whether we are talking about the Eastern Mediterranean, Western Balkans route, Central Mediterranean, or Western Mediterranean, or Northern, basically affecting the Baltic countries or Central European countries. So the point that we spoke about was how to work on the pact, which was agreed, and how to respect it, but also if there are needs for the improvement. Some of the countries were saying a few things in that direction.
Would you be in favor of the more controversial idea, which is to have hubs for migrants outside the EU's borders? Would you like to see something like that set up just beyond Croatia's borders, for example?
We are reserved for the moment about this new initiative that Italy and Albania made. We shall see how this, I would say, pilot project will function. So far, what we understand, there are some legal issues, there are difficulties. The Italian courts are taking decisions about certain migrants who were sent to this center but are supposed to go back to Italy. So we need to see a little bit in practice how this will function. What we advocate all the time is full alignment of the visa policy of the countries that are not yet in the EU but are between the EU member states, and that are the countries of Southeast Europe, where we have seen this unacceptable practice that people fly in to Belgrade or to Sarajevo without a visa requirement as tourists, and then they end up as illegal migrants trying to cross the so-called green border, for instance, to Croatia. 40% of the illegal migrants which are stopped by our police on our borders actually came to our region and want to enter Schengen and the EU through our border by illegally crossing it in a such a manner. And that is something we need to address very firmly. The other issue, of course, is to work with the countries with who are the real origins of this migration, and then with transit countries with different mechanisms that we have, especially by supporting the financially different centers and the countries where the number of migrants is substantive. In the Middle East, you have a lot of them.
I want to ask you about support for Ukraine, because you were a major player in the so-called Dubrovnik Declaration, which was a meeting of Western Balkans and Southeast European leaders. You had expressions of support and commitment to your ally, Volodymyr Zelensky, the Ukrainian president, to whom Croatia has provided no fewer than 11 aid packages. But if you take the Western Balkans collectively, you've got President Vucic in Serbia, who was in Dubrovnik, but at the same time, he says he wants to develop ties of trust with the Russian government. How do you respond to that? What's your reaction to that?
First of all, I was very happy to host the summit of the format between Ukraine and the countries of Southeast Europe. All 14 countries were represented. This was the first time that everybody's around that was around the table when President Zelensky arrived. That was a few weeks ago. And this declaration was also mentioned in the conclusions of the European Council last week, which I think was an important acknowledgement. Croatia, as you said, has given to Ukraine 11 packages of military aid, let alone other economic, technical, energy aid that we are providing. And this aid was substantive, and it was done in a bilateral manner with our unilateral decisions as government in order to support Ukraine as a victim. When it comes to the Russian aggression, of course. When it comes to the other countries, we know that Serbia is one of those countries which is yet to align its foreign and security and defense policy with the European Union as a key. Unlike majority of the other countries in our region, their level of alignment is between 50% and 60%, which means that they're playing this multi-vector approach, a little bit with Brussels, a little bit with Berlin, a little bit with Paris, a little bit with Moscow, a little bit with Beijing. But that is their approach, and I think it is important that all the key partners within the European Union and allies within NATO understand this policy. If Serbia really genuinely wants to join the European Union, sooner or later, I hope rather sooner, they will have to make up their mind despite their historical ties with Russia.
Well, that's a very clear statement. It's now been 11 years since the last enlargement when Croatia joined the European Union. We've had the President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, touring the Western Balkans and touting this 6 billion euro growth plan for the Western Balkans. Do you see in this new EU mandate, Prime Minister, a real impetus for enlargement, or is it just going to be more talk and not enough action, as some have said was the case in the last EU mandate?
Well, the fact that Croatia is the latest member of the club, and this latest means already more than 11 years ago, it's quite some time that has elapsed in between. What I think we should be conducting a policy of the enlargement that is based on the individual merits, reform conducted, and the key and the readiness of institutions to basically carry the obligations of EU membership. I think there is a new political momentum. The biggest promoter of the enlargement policy is Putin. Had he not invaded Ukraine and the aggression of 2.5 years ago, I don't think when we would have seen the transfer of the neighboring and partnership countries such as Ukraine, Moldova, and Georgia to a pool which is called the enlargement process. So now we have many more countries who have the vocation to join and have applied for membership. So I think there is an acceleration. But what I also sense in the future, we shall see the criteria that every country has to fulfill. But also what I sense is the comeback of the fourth Copenhagen criteria. Copenhagen back in 1993, long time ago, very few people remember. And that criteria is called the absorption capacity of the European Union for the new members. Because the biggest impact of the enlargement in the future will be A, on the decision-making process and the functioning of institutions, especially at the Council level and in terms of numbers of the Commissioner. And the third, the most substantive one, is of course the budgetary impact of the accession of the big countries on the cohesion policy, on the agricultural policy, on the budgetary policy. And these are the real issues that will be opened in the next couple of years. But at this stage, the position of my country is to support the reform-oriented agenda of all of those who want to join, but they need to fulfill the criteria and the Union needs to be ready.
I think you've outlined the EU side of things very clearly, but when it comes to public opinion in some of these countries, that's a question mark, isn't it? And if you look at the referendum in Moldova that just took place on whether to join the EU or not, it was just over 50%, razor thin margin in favor of joining the EU. What did that result tell you?
Well, what we have seen over the past years when it comes to the electoral and democratic tests of each of the countries on the European continent, we have seen the influence of the external forces in the debate, in the hybrid warfare, in the disinformation. And this many times leads either to a fragmentation of the political spectrum or a very clear polarization. What we have seen in Moldova, especially given the fact that the referendum on the finalité of the EU membership for the country was organized together with the presidential elections, we see that those who voted in favor are just slightly ahead of those who were against. So I think this requires even more, as the French would say, pédagogie politique by the political leaders in Moldova, more aggressive, more clear, because it's not easy to explain to the society what are the benefits. We had similar but not the same issues, and we managed. So I think in the countries that were really part of the former, let's say, pool of the countries that were more connected with Russia, I think this debate in terms of democratic explanation, it's even more difficult. And Moldova is certainly an example, let alone the fact that Transnistria has de facto not been part of the country since the beginning of the 90s.
Yeah, I think pédagogie politique, we would translate as explaining better to voters what's at stake in these situations. But we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much, Prime Minister Andrej Plenković, Prime Minister of Croatia, joining me from Zagreb there. Do stay with us, because in part two of Talking Europe, we'll be talking about the US election on November the 5th, of course, of crucial importance, not just to the US, but to Europe and to much of the rest of the world. Do stay with us.